It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Tuesday night, June 19, 17-year-old Antoine Rose Jr. is shot and killed by East Pittsburgh police officer Michael Rosfeld. Rose, who was unarmed, fled from a car in which he was a passenger. The car matched a description of one involved in the drive-by shooting minutes earlier.
So I would urge that people in the community give us a chance to conduct an objective investigation, and I guarantee that that's what they'll get from the Allegheny County Police.
It's just unfortunate that you can be 17 and be considered a threat running away from police and get shot in the back, and nothing is really being done about it.
Boy took off. For whatever reason, he took off. No gun in his hand. Just run, boom, boom, boom. Wow. So that made me think that he was just going out there to kill somebody today.
I've been knowing him since he was a kid. And he's always been a very respectful kid. Very, very respectful. Very respectful kid.
He was a good person, a good student. Loved his family as we loved him.
We took a statement from Rosfeld. He's on audio and video. He indicates that at no time was there a weapon in play. The evidence supports third-degree murder. There's no doubt about that in my mind. Manslaughter, voluntary manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter. But we think we should have the right to argue murder in the first degree.
That was Allegheny County Police Superintendent Coleman McDonough, followed by two of the hundreds and hundreds of protesters, plus two family friends who attended Monday's funeral, and finally, District Attorney Stephen Zapala. On today's program, we're going to discuss the events of the past 10 days, the fatal shooting, community reaction, and homicide charges filed against the officer. In studio, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reporter Shelley Bradbury, David Harris, WESA's legal analyst and University of Pittsburgh professor of law, also WESA reporter Anlie Herring, as well as Chris Potter, who heads up our government and accountability team. Welcome to all of you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
The filing of homicide charges against Rosfeld did not quell the public protests. Wednesday evening, there were some demonstrators outside Rosfeld's home where he is free on bond but on house arrest. Thursday, protesters were outside the East Pittsburgh Municipal Building. Among other things, protesters are demanding that Rosfeld's bond be revoked. What else and why? Shelley, let's start with you.
So Officer Rosfeld was booked into the Allegheny County Jail on Wednesday morning and very quickly released on an unsecured bond. So he did not have to pay anything to get out of jail, which many protesters are upset about because that's not typical in a homicide case.
And the house arrest was ordered. Is that correct?
Right. After the initial decision by the magisterial district judge, there was a revision to the conditions of the bond that required him to stay on electronic home monitoring.
Okay. And Anlie.
The protesters were also calling for the East Pittsburgh Police Department to adopt a new hiring policy and training policies because they said someone like Rosfeld never should have gotten hired based on his history. The most apparent example at this point is his past with the University of Pittsburgh Police, where he filed charges and his description of what happened didn't match up with the evidence. So that was a red flag for a lot of people, and they're questioning how this person could have been hired in East Pittsburgh.
I want to talk. The protests have been going on almost every day since the shooting. I want to get a sense of, have you noticed any change in the tone of the protests at all, Chris?
I mean, less than you might think, and I think the debate over the bail terms is a good example. These folks, they've seen this movie before, right? Nationally, you've seen a lot of cases where an officer is ever charged. It's very difficult for a jury to convict a police officer in this situation. The entire justice system is built around the idea that we can trust our police, we can trust law enforcement. And so you get these guys in front of a jury and it's a tough case to make. And so I was struck that, you know, while the family had some guardedly optimistic things to say once the charges were announced, the protesters that we spoke to and I think other reporters heard from still very, very skeptical. And I think you're going to see at every stage of this process, just a very skeptical, wary eye turned towards anything that happens, and any kind of concession made that smacks of favoritism for an officer is going to spark a considerable amount of controversy.
Shelley, has the tone of the protest been consistent? Has it changed at all over the course of the last week or so?
Yeah, I would say sort of echo what Chris said in that the protesters are happy to see the progress of this officer being charged, but they are still very unconvinced and feel very like it's very critical for them to keep the pressure on and to not relax or step back from the actions that they've been taking.
Yeah, only.
I have to say I was struck by reports that protesters did go to Officer Rosfeld's home and were protesting out there. That is a very direct approach and potentially put the officer in a vulnerable position. So I don't really know how to interpret that in the context of all the other protests, but that to me did stand out.
Okay. As I said, the protests continue even after the criminal charges were filed against Rosfeld. Any surprises from Zapala's decision to file charges? Let's start with you, David Harris.
I don't think it was terribly surprising given the level of evidence that is out there. You had video in this case, first a cell phone video, and then it became their other video has been released that indicated that the shots were fired when the young man was running away. So it was clearly an escape going on. It was not a matter of stopping him from committing some kind of violent crime. You combine this with other videos that came out after the announcement of the charges. You have a video showing that he was not the one. The backseat passenger was the one who participated in this crime. And then you had the recorded statement by Officer Rosfeld that he gave to the county police, in which he basically admitted at least once, maybe more than once, that he saw no gun. You put all those things together, you simply can't avoid the idea that this was a violation of the law. The police have the right to use deadly force in certain instances, but it is all highly regulated. And the rule number one is you can't use deadly force just to stop somebody from running away, even running away in a felony situation. There has to be danger to the police officer, to a bystander, to somebody posed by the person possessing a weapon or an ongoing felony. If you don't have that, you can't stop somebody from escaping by killing them. That is basic constitutional law and basic Pennsylvania law.
Okay. Now, we'll get to the possibility of a conviction later on. But anybody else surprised at all by the charges being filed in the first place? Shelley?
I wasn't surprised by the charges necessarily, but there was a tidbit that came out during when Zapala was addressing the media, in which he said that it looked like Antoine had showed the officer his hands before he ran and that those hands were empty.
That's right.
And that was a very important fact for him to put out there because it sort of changes what the officer knew at the time, which is a very critical factor in whether he was justified in using force or not.
Right. Only.
Yeah, I would say what has, I guess, surprised me through this process is just the facts, the additional facts that keep coming out. It's hard to know whether there's a basis for charges without knowing all the facts. And knowing that Rosfeld gave conflicting testimony on whether he saw a weapon, and knowing that, at least according to the criminal complaint, Rose indicated he was not armed, that does make these charges seem to be warranted, but we didn't know that, and that's why it's important to let the investigation play out, and there's just so many factors at play.
David, I want to get a brief explanation from you. We heard just a few minutes ago DA Zapala saying that there is evidence for third-degree murder. He also put out there voluntary manslaughter and even involuntary manslaughter, but said he wants the right to argue first-degree criminal homicide, first-degree murder. What's the difference here?
Well, remember that the initial charge just said homicide, criminal homicide. Criminal homicide is a generic term for all of the homicide crimes. And a typical state, and Pennsylvania is typical on this, will have different degrees of murder, will have voluntary manslaughter and involuntary manslaughter. And they're all slightly different. They all involve the unlawful killing of a human being. When Zappala says we definitely have the evidence for third-degree murder, he is talking about an intentional killing, but without any premeditation. And that is a standard piece of criminal law. He also said, I remember, that he wanted the right to argue first degree in front of the jury, the most serious kind of murder. And he will have that right under Pennsylvania law. The law in this state does not require him to specify one of those homicide charges at the beginning. He can follow the evidence where it goes, and the jury can convict of whichever level seems right given the evidence.
So it's not an all or nothing. They can find a certain degree.
Correct.
Okay. So did, at the news conference, did the district attorney get questioned about public pressure? Because whether it was from the protesters or other officials, did he get questioned about public pressure and whether that had anything to do with his charges?
Yeah, he was asked directly whether he felt pressure to bring these charges, given the community reaction, and he explicitly said no, he felt no pressure, just we have a strong case against this officer, so we're justified in bringing these charges.
But he did so rather quickly, didn't he, Shelley?
Bring the charges?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was just about a week and a day after the initial incident, which is pretty quick.
You know, this the speed at which the charges were brought, this is the main difference that you're seeing between 2014, the Ferguson incident, and now. And this is in city after city, incident after incident. In the past, an investigation would be dragged out, sometimes deliberately, until people kind of forgot about it. That doesn't play anymore. And I think very much Zappala colleagues around the country in DA's offices, they know it. They move ahead with a lot more speed than they used to.
Well, since you brought up Ferguson, Missouri, many other communities across the nation have had to deal with similar tragedies, including Ferguson, where a young unarmed black man, Michael Brown, was fatally shot by a suburban police officer. It was nearly 4 years ago. Protests reverberated around the country. Our 90.5 WESA's Larkin Page Jacobs talked with St. Louis Public Radio reporter Rachel Lippman.
I was actually out the kind of Saturday night, the night after this happened. It's either Saturday or Sunday. I can't remember at this point. It was kind of chaotic. It got violent out there. That was the night that you had the reports of quite a bit of looting throughout kind of the area where this happened. And as those protests continued to go on night after night after night, with sort of escalating tensions, escalating use of tear gas, escalating use of other control, is when we realized that these protests were different and kind of could evolve into something that was a little bit more sustained. And it was about a week and a half to 2 weeks of just kind of nightly protests. Once the national media got out of town shortly after Mike Brown's funeral is when things kind of started to settle down.
One thing I should ask you is, what were the ancillary issues that these protests ended up being about? Because initially, right, it was about this shooting, but then there were some bigger issues.
This was the very sort of like central basic trigger to all of this was the shooting death of Mike Brown. But what people saw his death as emblematic of was just the way that the African-American communities in this area of North St. Louis County were policed. These are small towns. Some of them have no more than about, you know, anywhere from 500 to 2,000 residents. They all have their own police forces and the way that they make a lot of their revenue, and it's, you know, set aside as a line item in the budget, is police revenue, is from fines and fees and tickets and them counting on the inability of people to be able to pay these tickets. So they go to jail, then they have to pay bail to get out, and it truly is policing for profit. So while the direct cause of the protests was Michael Brown's death, they saw it as a symbol of African Americans have been targeted by police for so long that this is an unfortunately natural consequence.
Was there anything about this movement that surprised you or that you didn't expect?
I think what was interesting to me is when we realized it was kind of going to be a younger person's movement, the older activists, the ones who had a history in St. Louis, they'd do their press conference and they'd leave, and it would be the young activists who would be leading the marches and staying out there. And we saw that thread continue to play out in terms of they being the ones to lead sort of the social justice and the social outreach efforts.
And so what's happened since the protests have ended? Are police community relations any better? Has anything changed?
On paper, things have changed. The courts are now limited in terms of the amount of revenue that they can take in. The city of Ferguson is, of course, under the federal consent decree and how it has to operate. But there were no real big legislative changes that were pushed through either at the state, local, or federal levels. There was a big report that came out called the Ferguson Commission. It outlined all of these different things that lawmakers could do to really push for reforms. Some of them can't be done at the state level. It needs federal reforms, but the ones that can be done at the state level haven't been acted on because Republicans are in supermajority control of both chambers of the state legislature. So while attention was focused on the problem in terms of objectively laws that have happened, not much, and people would probably correctly argue not enough.
It was such an intense period. Do you feel like there's been any lasting change?
It's been, it'll be, what, 4 years, I think, August 9th, since this happened. And that's, you know, a long time in the scheme of some things, but in the process of making change, it's not. So lasting change, not yet in 4 years, but you have the people now who are sort of trained and able to keep going and working forward.
That was WESA's Larkin Page Jacobs speaking with St. Louis Public Radio reporter Rachel Lippman. I have to mention that since the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, since that time, in 2014, 12-year-old Tamir Rice was shot and killed by police in Cleveland while playing with a pellet gun. Officers not indicted. 2016, Baton Rouge. Alton Sterling was killed by two officers, no charges. Minnesota, an officer was tried and acquitted for the death of Philando Castile. And also 2 years ago, Freddie Gray was killed. Charges filed, dropped after acquittals and deadlocked juries in Baltimore. Okay, so we heard a St. Louis reporter talking about issues beyond the killing of Michael Brown. Have we heard other issues here in Pittsburgh beyond, deeper and broader, in addition to the killing of Antoine Rose? So let's start with you, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've heard a lot of is a broader concern, especially with District Attorney Stephen Zappala and sort of his records of choices. I mean, I think that's what so much of this distrust is about, right? Previous high-profile cases, the shooting of Leon Ford several years ago, who was also shot by police. Mr. Ford tried driving away from a traffic stop after he'd been detained for a fairly extraordinary period of time. An officer shot him, and he's been partially paralyzed ever since then. So was charged by Mr. Zappala's office. Those charges were later dismissed after a hung jury there, too. But I think there's this broader sense here of this particular prosecutor in these in folks' minds has not been aggressive enough, although he has prosecuted at least one officer for murder before in a shooting incident as well. So I think there's a focus there, I think, particularly on Mr. Zappala at this point. There is starting to be discussion about policies and procedures in East Pittsburgh and other places, but I think that'll sort of broaden out now that we've got charges.
Okay, we have about 3 minutes left. I want to quickly get to Shelley and Ann Lee. Something that came up also in that conversation was younger protesters sort of taking the lead. Have you noticed that, Shelley and Ann Lee? Shelley?
Yeah, we've definitely seen a younger crowd, especially out at these protests where they are walking in the streets and blocking intersections. That has been led by, I would say, generally younger protesters. One teenager in particular, 18-year-old Christian Carter, has been seen at many of the protests, and he's been a very consistent figure. He was actually hospitalized for appendicitis on Wednesday, right. and has continued to lead from his sort of recovery process by using social media. So that's been interesting to watch.
Anlay, you've noticed younger protesters as well?
I would say there is a critical mass of young protesters really kind of leading the charge here. Though at the protests I've been to, it's been several now, there is a diversity in terms of age. There are lots of mothers, fathers,
and
grandparents.
Race as well.
There is racial diversity, though I would say it's predominantly people of color.
Okay, about 2 minutes left. David, the preliminary hearing is next Friday, July 6th. Just briefly talk about the difficulty of getting a success, getting a conviction against a police officer?
Well, Chris said it best a few minutes ago. It's difficult under the best of circumstances with a strong case to get a conviction of a police officer. You have juries who walk into the room with a lot of trust usually in police. Not every jury, but that's usually how it is. They come in thinking that police are the good guys. And when you put a police officer on trial, even though most police are the good guys, you put a police officer on trial, you're asking jurors to turn the world, in fact, upside down, that they have lived with their whole lives. It is difficult to get a conviction out of a jury even when charges are brought. That's the lesson of so many cases, several of which you talked about a minute ago, Kevin. So you really have to look at this, where we are now, the preliminary hearing, the charges, as the beginning of a long process, which may or may not produce a conviction in the end. We won't know that until we get to the very end of this.
Okay. I want to get this briefly in our remaining minute or so. Another protest we know is scheduled for Sunday at noon in East Liberty. Have we heard anything beyond that? Do we expect additional ones? Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, I think we definitely expect additional ones. I think there's supposed to be one Saturday as well, although I'm not fully conversant with the details there. I don't think they've been released. There's a very deliberate strategy to be kind of surprising about these things. So you don't know exactly when they're coming. That enhances sort of the disruptive
quality. Or even where?
Sometimes, yeah, they keep their cards very close to the vest. It's a deliberate strategy. I heard an organizer referring to it as Houdini-ing their approach here.
We have just 30 seconds left.
On the protests, one of the things that you're seeing is the way that Pittsburgh police are handling these protests comes directly from Ferguson. Ferguson was a textbook example of how police should not respond. Their sort of shock and awe approach to those protests made everything worse, and the Pittsburgh police are using restraint.
All right. Very quickly, 10 seconds, Shelley. What are you expecting?
Yes, I would also expect to see more protests.
All right. Shelley Bradbury is a reporter for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Ann Lee Herring is a reporter. Chris Potter is the leader of WESA's government accountability team. And David Harris is WESA's legal analyst, is host of the Criminal Justice Injustice podcast. Thanks to all of you. Appreciate your being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Our engineer is Tom Hurley. Production assistance and research from Avery Keatley. The producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good week of good news.